Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week features highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
This week, we have a town hall hosted by WRLG-LP 92.9 Germantown Live in Richmond Center to celebrate Martin Luther King. The issue was the fight for the minimum wage increase that hasn't risen in over 11 years in Pennsylvania. This affects the community and how poverty increases. The show is Vanessa's Money Hour and is hosted by Vanessa Lowe.
Welcome to Vanessa's Money Hour. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowe. I had the privilege of hosting a town hall about raising the minimum wage in Philadelphia.
Our first speaker today is my very own minister, Reverend Kent Mathias, of the Unitarian Society of Germantown.
The issue of poverty is so critically painful and violent. Poverty is violent in our human, when it happens in our human family, and it certainly imposes a lot of suffering on our people here in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia. So we're here today to advocate for raising of the wage to $15 an hour and an ending of preemption, so that if Harrisburg won't do it, they'll at least let other municipalities, including Philadelphia, raise our wage to do the right thing. Because we know here, when we look around and pay attention with our eyes and hearts, we see companies like Comcast have money to build gigantic new state-of-the-art skyscrapers, and then our city remains plagued by poverty. For as long as anybody I know can remember, Philadelphia remains amongst the 10 largest cities in America, the one with the highest poverty rate. 26% of our people in our beloved Philadelphia are living below the poverty rate. That's compared to 12% right now as the national poverty rate. It's a cunning, ugly, and vicious silent killer through a supposedly legitimate, but in reality, immoral wage. So just, we got to say this again and again, because it just is so outrageous. Pennsylvania minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. We know, anybody do the math, you cannot live on $7.25 an hour with health and dignity. In our city, these are examples of how off Pennsylvania is. In our city, 6 of 10 people seeking free food from Philabundance are working, have a working person in their household. They're working for pay, but not making enough and still need to ask to meet their food needs. Earning $7.25, an adult working full-time earns $14,500 annually. That's about $7,000 below the poverty line for a parent with two children. The minimum wage is higher in all surrounding states. Delaware is $2 higher. Maryland is $3.75 higher. And New York is $4.55 higher.
Let's now hear from somebody who is impacted by this bill. And she represents many, many people. Next, I want to introduce Nene Diallo of Unite Here Service Union. Unite Here specifically represents food and hotel service workers. Nene, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I am very honored to be here. So my name is Nene Diallo. I work at the LSG SkyChef at the Philadelphia International Airport. Things have been rough since the pandemic. I've been laid off 3 times since March, and I'm laid off again right now. I have been waiting 4 weeks for my unemployment. My son just turned 14 and my daughter 9. They are home all the time. They attend virtual classes. They used to spend a lot of time at the library, but they are not able to do that anymore. Food has been more expensive in the market. It's tough, but we are coping with it. When I first started my job, I made $7.25 an hour. I used to work overtime to be able to scrape by just to be able to cope with all the expenses. Often, I had to choose between eating and paying my bills. That's what $7.25 an hour means. Going hungry. Plain and simple. We are fighting for a minimum wage of 15. People are losing their houses. I've seen neighborhoods all over Philadelphia where the homes are abandoned. People can't afford to keep them. Martin Luther King Jr. fought for equality. It's not enough for people in power to sit on their billions while the people at the bottom are suffering. I came to this country because it's a land of opportunity. As a new citizen, I see that we are the richest country in the world, and still here is so much poverty. I knew when I came here that I would have to struggle, but I did not expect to be like this. People deserve to keep their homes. We need to pay rent, our utilities, the car notes, and maybe even afford health insurance. I believe this is a life and death issue. We must continue to fight today as Martin Luther King did yesterday, so that all people can be free and live a meaningful life. Thank you.
Thank you, Nene. We all appreciate Nene sharing her story. You know, we talk about the country, and it's a, you know, our wonderful country, and one of the things we have to acknowledge is that it's extremely segregated in many ways, but particularly economically segregated. So many people, Nene's story is not something they're familiar with. They don't know people who, you know, are struggling between do I eat or pay my bills. So I guess I want to put out there, just imagine for those of you who don't know a Nene, to think Nene's your sister, Nene's your mother. All right, let's move on. Our next speaker is Frances Upshaw. Frances is a board member for Power, and she's going to tell us what preemption means. I keep getting confused by that word. Frances, welcome.
Thank you. On this day, we commemorate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who died helping to support a sanitation worker strike in Memphis, Tennessee. Just as in 1968, and 100 years before that, at the end of slavery, we still find ourselves fighting for better wages for Black, brown, and poor people. To coin a phrase, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And so we continue the mission of seeing that everyone is allowed to live their best life, earning a living wage. That is why we must end preemption. What is preemption? Looking into a few dictionaries did not help. For my own satisfaction, it sounds like to not allow. And I will say that again. It sounds like to not allow. There are several areas that the state of Pennsylvania chooses to not allow input from its municipalities. $7.25 as a minimum wage in Pennsylvania is a moral insult. It may be legal, but it is still wage theft. How about it, Pennsylvania? Can we just allow municipalities to decide for themselves on wages? It's fair, it's right, and it helps lift people out of poverty. Thank you.
All right, our next speaker is Reverend Sandra Brown of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, who's going to close us out.
Vanessa, thank you for keeping us going here. So I don't know about you, but if you have been listening, my reaction is that I'm angry, now that I'm angry. Did you hear what has been said? $7.25 has been the wage in Pennsylvania for 14 years. 14 years. That's outrageous. That certainly is not following Dr. King's dream. It's certainly not following what we need to be doing. So what can we do? Did you hear Nene say that she has to choose between food and paying the bills sometimes? Did you hear that? Do you know what that's like? This affects everybody. It doesn't affect, we've been talking a lot about Philadelphia today. It affects everybody, though. The issue that we're really talking about here is understanding that the counties in Pennsylvania cannot make their own choices and raise their own minimum wage. That's what we're talking about. We are fighting for the ability for a lot of things we're fighting for. We want the counties to be able to make their own minimum wage so that, in fact, the counties where people are most affected can help to support their folks. Did you hear that this is a moral insult? It is. Of course it's a moral insult. It's an economic insult. It's an insult to all of us that some have to survive on what they can't, below the poverty level. We cannot be free until all are free. Injustice anywhere threatens the justice for everyone. Help us to know that even if we are in the realm of those who make enough to live off of, that others are not, and help us to speak up. Oh God, we ask you now that your blessing would rest upon us, that your presence would be with us, that your peace would illuminate our hearts now and forevermore as we go out to do, to serve, to be, to think, to be outraged today. Amen.
And that's add a thank you to everybody that participated. And I did want to say in 2006, when we raised the minimum wage, we had the chamber and businesses saying that we were going to lose jobs and they were going to go away. But you know what happened? The people that got that raise the minimum wage went out and spent it right in their own community and no jobs were lost. I just wanted to make that point, one final point.
And this is Reverend Kent Mathias. I want to thank everybody as well. And some of the story we've had here, well, around the country, really, is some of the big box stores out of necessity, probably not out of moral compass, but stores like Target and Home Depot have raised their wage above the city wage and paid higher, up to 11 or more per hour, including in Pennsylvania. So taking aside what their motivations are, because we really probably just care about what their actions are, I do believe there's a role for a partnership across the business, nonprofit, faith communities, and elected officials to get some of these really fine bills like our legislators have in front of us today verbally to get some broader support. Because the last thing is we're losing people left and right to other states. You know, if you have any kind of choice, why would you stay here versus go across the line to make more money? So people know there's a people drain, there's a talent drain that's happening in this state that is harmful.
Reverend, what we're looking at, too, is also trying to get a referendum on our ballot, because I honestly believe that if it's up to the people themselves, they will vote to make sure that minimum wage goes up to $15.
At WPEB 88.1 Scribe Radio New Producer Training Workshop, we have beautiful interviews conducted by the workshop participants. Here, Elisa Frieden interviews Leah, a 9-year-old girl, about her experiences in times of COVID.
Was that because you're on Zoom that you get out early?
If we were in the building, we would have 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock. So basically, if we were in the building, we would still get out an hour early. And now that since we're on Zoom, they really shortened it for some reason. So yeah. Now we get out at 10:30 and we start at 9:45.
Welcome, everyone. I'm here with Leah, age 9. Leah is a Libra who has been living in King Sussing for all of her life. How are you doing today?
I am doing good, and I'm really energized just to see my friend Alyssa on. I also had a good day in school, so I'm pretty energized.
I guess we just talked a little bit about what school looks like because of the pandemic, but is there anything else you want to talk about as far as how the pandemic has affected school for you? What's it like going to school on Zoom?
Well, it's kind of tiring and kind of distracting because you have noises all around you because of my parents' TV, my parents talking, and basically they do that every single day. Like, of course, someone has to talk to someone and they got to watch TV or something. So basically, it's a lot of noise when I turn my mic off and it's distracting to me.
What's socializing with your classmates like? Do you get to do that or not so much?
I kind of get to do it sometimes, but not all the time because we're basically, sometimes we go in breakout rooms and we do work in breakout rooms, but once we're done, if we get done before the breakout rooms close, we get to talk a little bit.
Do you remember all the way back at the beginning of last year when you first found out that everything was happening, how it made you feel and what it was like to all of a sudden, because you weren't even in school for a while, right?
Yes.
How did that feel?
I was absolutely shocked and surprised. I kept asking questions. I kept asking, where did it come from? Why is it here? Why is it called COVID? How did they find it? How did they find about this? And how would other people feel if I don't know if I'm overreacting or not? And I just kept asking questions and a lot of questions.
Do you feel like you were getting answers to your questions?
Yeah, as the time went on, they answered the questions on the news. They didn't know I asked them, but of course they said like where it came from. Some people said it came from China, and I honestly don't know where it came from.
How do you feel as someone who's kind of young, who has older parents? How does it make you feel to be living that truth in the pandemic?
I feel like it's really scary because I am young myself, and I have some pretty old parents over the age of 50, actually over the age of 60. But I feel like that's really scary because, you know, my dad has some breathing problems right now. He had cancer 2 times in his life, and I'm grateful for him still moving. He has 60% of his right lung removed, and it's kind of really sad to see that he can't wear his mask sometimes because of his breathing problems.
Do you feel like you've learned something directly because of COVID?
That you gotta love your family members while you can.
Wow.
And that if you have some problems with someone, like you get mad at someone, you want to try to apologize or have them apologize fast because anything can happen.
If you could tell the residents of Philadelphia anything, what would you want to tell them?
Everyone wanted to tell them to try to keep their mask on as much as possible when they go out.
Then we have Gladys Harlow, who interviews Talib the poet from Philadelphia.
Hello, I am here with Robert Stratton, aka Talib the poet, aka Chicken Stick the Black Superhero. You're also a poet, a painter, a promoter, a puppeteer, a entrepreneur. You've got your own clothing company.
Well, I have three clothing lines, Moxie, Goosey, and Black Bandana.
Now that we've been a year into this pandemic, which has been so devastating and has affected our lives and how it might have affected you or your community or people in your life.
I think it affected a lot of the elder people in my neighborhood, and a lot of the children. I'm more so concerned about, you know, them receiving the proper food, proper medical attention. I do give a lot of appreciation in regards to our medical workers in the medical field, because right now they're doing their very best, and they're doing their very best with what they got to deal with.
If you could write a letter to yourself to put into a time capsule and send to yourself before the pandemic, what would you tell yourself? What would you write?
Well, it probably would be short, and it would say something like, "Hurry up, they waiting on you. Why are you taking so long to get here?" I mean, like, and I say that because I believe I'm the people's champion, realistically. I mean, there's a lot of women and children. There's a lot of abandoned houses around the city. We have corona just ravishing through different states. And there's no way that there should be people living on the street. There's sickness out here amongst the people who live on the street. And then on top of that, you have to look at our prison population. There's people who are in prison that are coming home from prison. There are people that are going into prison. They're not even provided proper bottled water. They got to drink their waters from their sink, their faucet. So even providing proper medical needs of water, antibiotics, vegetables, fruits to people in prison, so when they do come home and they mingle amongst the community, that they will not be one transferring and bringing something out of the prison, or those who go in will not be bringing in something in to affect whoever coming out.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you for sharing your thoughts and for doing everything you do in the community. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to send off as a message to the people?
I hope these words get to good people, or I hope they get to bad people that become good people. I used to ask how come. Now I'm going to think about the outcome. Families need income. We live in a time where you could lose your brains in some. Only the dead is dumb. And it's a shame they're young. But flames, just be flaming, son. You know it's signs of the times when moms pick up guns and grandmoms open crack houses to earn funds. Streets so polluted, air burn your tongue. Streets so polluted, air burn your lungs. Fathers against sons. I think the sisters is the lonely ones. And these dudes live life like they the only ones. I got grief like a thief in the night, and I wouldn't have to take if I was eating right. Ain't no loyalty in the circle, so the circle ain't keeping tight. And it's bad when you gotta keep your right hand in sight. You start noticing things like, who could stand the light? That's why I stay out the light. That's why my boo wonder why I stay up at night. Cause if you die, you closer to heaven. If you kill, you closer to hell. In between that gap, you end up in jail. And if you make it past all that, it was only a dream. Cause somewhere in the ghetto, someone lonely is screaming. And to a person with AIDS, death row ain't as cold as it seems. Either you sick or you going insane. You know it's signs of the times when dudes tote three guns with no vest. Cops kill with no stress. State go to war with state. Love fall in love with hate. And you rather eat a bullet than the food on your plate. You know it's signs of the times when you grow up hating your moms, and children go from candy cake to making bombs. Outlaws carry shovels because niggas is dying, and the devil do more laughing than crying. You know it's signs of the time when time is short. Your own mom testifying in court. HIV is just as normal as pork. Everything we eat is awful. Rape is lawful. And a 9-year-old won't hesitate to off you. You know what signs are times. You know what signs. Tyler, the poet, name that poem is signs are times.
And we'll close with Camillo Smith, who interviews Reginald, an essential worker, about his life during the pandemic.
Tell me your name.
Reginald Smith.
And where do you live?
In Salem, Pennsylvania.
And what ways has the pandemic affected you?
I work in the service industry, so since the beginning of the pandemic, I've been forced to deal with a lot of people on a daily basis. The whole pandemic has really heightened my anxiety.
And so from the beginning of the pandemic, how did that affect, you know, your day-to-day work for that company?
It was difficult for me because I had to wait for a lot of places to actually catch up with the actual threat of the COVID-19. So in the very beginning, when I was servicing clients for my company, a lot of the clients, they weren't aware of how dangerous the COVID situation was. So I have to balance the whole customer service aspect of dealing with our actual clients with my own anxieties and how I felt about the particular situation.
You had to deal with anxiety.
And then the anxiety also involves my family, because I had to come to grips with every single day. I did not know if I was exposed to COVID-19. I didn't. So every single day I walked in the house, I could have been potentially infected, and I could have infected my family. So I had a system every single day on how I walked into customers' buildings, and I repeated my routine 20, 30 times every single day. And I had a routine that I repeated when I walked into the house. The threat or the possibilities were there every single day, and that just weighs on you on a daily basis. Watching the situation on the news and hearing news reports, it doesn't really do it justice. It's still, from what I understand from talking to people, it's really abstract. Unless you've been impacted personally unfortunately, through a death of a family member or something. Now it's very real at that point. But when you're out every single day and you're in the service industry, especially in my particular industry, and you go to hospitals, you go to medical facilities, you see a lot of things that other people don't see. I've seen those reefer trucks in the back of hospitals and wheeling gurneys into those reefer trucks in the back of hospitals.
What are you talking about? Refrigerated trucks? You're talking about the cold storage trucks that they brought bodies into?
Yes. I see them all the time, often. They're in the back of the hospitals. They're nondescript. If you didn't know what they were, you probably wouldn't even have noticed them.
Just going back a little bit, what were some of the habits that you had to develop, you know, going from outside to coming in the house?
Take my shoes off before I come in the house. I mean, you know, at the front door anyway. So that was just a repeated process. But I took my clothes off right away, you know, before, and my wife, she yells at me in case I forget, but I wash my hands immediately when I come in the house, and I strip down my work clothes immediately, put them in a garbage bag. It's just a clean process, just to make sure that you don't have any cross-contamination. Clean my car every single day with disinfectant wipes.
Now, do you feel like with, you know, the vaccines rolling out and everything, do you feel like you can, you know, dial it back a little bit or relax? Or what kind of, like, how are you guys handling this in your house?
I'm looking forward to getting the vaccine soon. I'm looking forward to my wife, my mother getting the vaccine soon so we could be more comfortable. But I don't plan on dialing back too much because in my mind, this is still a life and death scenario. And the last thing I want is for someone in my family to get sick and know that I'm responsible for that. The hard parts of the COVID is just not being able to be around other members of my family who don't live in my household.
Thank you for taking the time to listen today. This is Megan Hurley from Spanish language radio station WCNULP Radio Cata, 102.5 FM in Bridgeton, New Jersey. The Indie Radio Garden is a production of the Prometheus Radio Project.